Welcome to Audible Insights, brought to you by the Insights Association, the leading voice, resource, and network of the marketing research and analytics community. With our host, Paul Kirch, research industry veteran and business leader, and our amazing guest lineup, we'll uncover actionable insights and creative new ideas that you can apply to your own business so you can stand out from the competition. Here's Paul Kirch.
Folks, you're in for a treat here on Audible Insights. Today we've got Samrat Soran. He is the Senior Director of Brand Insights at Anheuser-Busch, AB InBev. And prior to that, his experience was at Pepsi in Consumer Insights, leading Pure Leaf and Brisk from North America. Samrat is passionate about unlocking the true potential of insights within the corporate environment through the use of strategic frameworks and new technologies. So let's welcome Samrat Soran to Audible Insights. Samrat, thank you for being on Audible Insights.
Thank you for having me, Paul.
Well, you bet. Hey, we're really thrilled to have you on. You've been with Anheuser-Busch for some time, doing some interesting work over there. The opportunity for people in the insights community to get deeper involved in a company, you know, I think Anheuser-Busch is a great example. I used to work for the Gallup organization. I know some of the work that's being done there. You guys take a really active role when it comes to people in an insights role or a research position. How can other insights decision makers get more involved and get more active within their companies and maybe drive things deeper into the food chain than they do?
Yeah, absolutely. I think what I liked about Anheuser-Busch, which I feel is unique to the culture of the company, is its drive for action. And that has been one of the real reasons behind how the Insights organization has sort of built itself up, is to be able to get to action versus level setting, which I keep saying is we don't do level setting, we do action setting. What that means is thinking about the insights that will drive sales, that will drive change in consumer behavior, as opposed to, hey, this is what we know of the world, I hope you feel inspired. Not to say that this is what a lot of insights people are doing, but I have seen this being one of the places where we've fallen in the past, which is, let me just set the field for you, and then hopefully I can inspire you in the process to really create good work. I think the onus in Anheuser-Busch on the insights team is, you know, deliver a lot more of the action that can guide the teams to really march forward. Let's spend less time thinking and more time doing.
And it seems like in a lot of companies, maybe from the top down, there's a lack of confidence in what's happening in the research area within the company, whereas it seems like you guys culturally have really adopted this idea of leveraging research to make decisions, to drive and give confidence. What are some things that we can do as researchers or insights decision makers to really kind of help foster better confidence within the organization?
It's been a journey for us. I wouldn't say that we just turned on this light switch one day and said, we're heading in this direction. It's been a big journey. We love numbers. And I think that's where it started from, is making sure that insights delivers real hard facts, and then allows you to translate those facts into, like I said, action. We started off with, all right, let's try validating what our hypotheses are. And we spent a considerable amount of time there. And then as we've evolved as a company, we've started moving more towards, let's understand the numbers in a way that will allow us to drive action. I think that's the one piece where we've done a better job than other companies, in my opinion, where we really think about, all right, if this is the objective that I'm trying to achieve, let me just put down the hypotheses, write down what they'd be. Let me figure out what the hard facts behind each of these hypotheses are so I can prove or disprove them. And then let me drive action with them. I think that's been the path that we've taken that has worked very well for us. Does that answer the question?
No, absolutely. That's great. And that gives some really good direction for anybody out there listening. So let's take it a little bit different approach then, because obviously you're driving some good action, which is a very positive sign. But are there some research methods you've found that maybe you're testing or anything you're leveraging today that you're kind of excited about, maybe something new or something that you're embracing that you haven't before?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that my personal bias has always been is in getting deeper into the consumer wise. Not driven by surveys or focus groups necessarily. I think those are great solutions, but really getting to the implicit, getting to beyond the surface level. So what we've started doing is investing heavily in the neurosciences and looking at how we can use that to really unlock growth for the company. So on my work in global, where I was working on Corona, which we own globally except in the US, we spent a lot of time with consumers in Chile, in Canada, in the UK, in Australia, really understanding how they were reacting at a neurological level to our advertising. And from there, we created a full playbook on how, knowing what is driving, you know, appreciation for the brand, the key emotion factors that we want to be able to drive, by really identifying those, creating the playbook that then the rest of the world could use to continue the great work that Corona has been doing. We actually did the same thing for Super Bowl, where we looked at, from a neurological level, what is the most important driver for Super Bowl ad performance in terms of emotion and engagement and memory. And we came up with some fantastic learnings, which we then used to optimize our ads. And we did it on Bud Light in very short time. So this was, I think, 3 weeks before Super Bowl that we ran the study, we got the results, and then we optimized the ad. And we actually did a next day poll with consumers to see what were the ads that they remembered the most. And Bud Light was number fifth of the 63 that were tested. And that was, you know, that was basically a validation of the fact that we delivered what we needed to do in that environment.
Were you surprised by those results, or did you have a high level of confidence with the direction you were going?
When we started the process, we were using the rough cuts of the ads. And when we ran the analysis on, one, what is it that takes, what it takes to win Super Bowl, and then we actually saw the numbers on Bud Light, we were very, very confident of the fact that where we were going to score with an ad meter from an absolute score perspective. But what we also knew was, we were so high on engagement and so high on emotional intensity, which were the key factors that we wanted to drive in Super Bowl. Because when you think about how people watch Super Bowl, they're really engaged. They want to enjoy the ads. And when you give them something of that production value, when you give them something that rich story, when you give them something that's as memorable as Dilly Dilly, you know that that's going to jump out. And it did. I mean, we had some great buzz numbers. We had the ads on unaided recall that we did in our survey were amazing. And we were going in confident that we'd do well.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that campaign, because depending on when somebody listens to this, that may be old news, but I was playing in a pool tournament this weekend, and this guy won a match, and he yelled out Dilly Dilly. It made me laugh. They take on a life of their own. Obviously, the Super Bowl's, it's a captive audience. You've got people there watching the game, but we've come to expect high things out of the commercials, so we stay tuned in for commercials, whereas that may not be the case with general watching or other games. How do we tap into those emotions and really trying to garner that same type of success outside of that captive environment?
This goes back to the point of really trying to understand the deeper meaning with consumers rather than just the surface level. I feel like one of the things that we've been doing is investing also into the use of implicit reaction technologies, trying to understand at the implicit level whether something has the potential to drive action. And I use those words very carefully, the potential to drive action versus stated responses on a survey that says, yes, this will motivate me to purchase. Because what I think we need to move away from a little bit is when a survey comes back with saying 70% said that they would purchase this in the future, I don't know how true that is, versus when I know from an implicit standpoint, I have actually moved the needle towards closeness to the brand, or I have moved closeness towards them, towards the occasion, or towards the brand in a certain way, then the probability of them purchasing or even considering the product actually improves significantly. It won't happen in the first moment that they go and buy it. They might not happen on the second moment, but by doing this in steps, I can actually get them to do it in the future in a way that is conducive to the brand. And that, I feel, is a place that we've, as an industry, we haven't invested in very strongly. We haven't really explored implicit to the extent, and it hasn't been developed in a commercial way that can be used, that I feel is a is something that I'm very hungry for.
Do you find that that's having an impact on loyalty, brand loyalty?
I do, because my previous job history has been, I've worked on in Pepsi, but I also worked on the partnership with Unilever and Pepsi. And then when I'd seen both sides of those worlds. And then when I came over to Anheuser-Busch, I realized that I was working with the same agencies that I was working on Pepsi and Unilever. And no fault of their own, I was also looking at the same kind of insights. And I was looking at the same style of surveys. And the one question I asked myself is, are the motivations to buy a soda or an iced tea the same as they are for beer? And if they're not the same, why am I asking the same kind of questions? And this is where I feel like we've allowed standardization in the name of efficiency to take over the heart of what our industry is, which is really getting to know the consumer at their base level. And that's where I think Implicit has a solution, because that is how you change loyalty, not through numbers on a survey, but by really gauging what's happening inside.
You know, I grew up in a Pepsi household, and I married somebody that was, I grew up in a Coca-Cola household. So we had this kind of, you know, cola war to an extent, but I was not nearly as committed to one brand over the other as I might be my beer. So when you came on board at Anheuser-Busch, I think you worked on the Pure Leaf product at PepsiCo. What was the biggest surprise you had in terms of dealing with, I guess we'll just say, the rabid fans and rabid loyalty of some of the beer drinkers out there?
So I think people are definitely a lot more emotional about beer than they are about, you know, other categories, beverage categories. It's just very strong emotional attachment they have to a ritual that has been created over time. It is a moment of bonding. It's a moment that you really invest emotionally in. And even if you might be doing it explicitly or implicitly, but the brands mean a lot more for you. And that emotional attachment was something that I saw very strongly with consumers in Anheuser-Busch, with our products, you know, with Budweiser, with Bud Light, with Stella Artois, in Corona globally. And that's where I come back to, surveys weren't giving me the full picture. I needed to be able to tap into that emotional space that they curated the brand in for themselves.
Okay, so we talked about some areas of research that you've been leveraging that have been successful, you've had some fun with. Let's talk about some areas where maybe you feel like it's maybe overhyped, or you were kind of disappointed with what you were seeing out of that. Any areas of research that you've been trying that you've kind of moved away from because you thought maybe, I guess we'll just use the phrase, there was more sizzle and not as much steak?
So I don't want to diss on any methodology. I think they all have their merits. My advice to the industry generally, and this is because a challenge that I face every day, I am not looking for people to deliver methodologies. I am looking for people to deliver, you know, action. And what I normally see when people come to pitch to me, or when people, or once they've won the pitch, when they actually deliver, they're doing a lot of level setting, not action setting. What I need from agencies, the ones that I really like working with, are the ones that are experts in the field of alcohol. They understand the industry, they understand the consumers, they understand the brands. And so the research that we do builds on that understanding to provide actual decisions. A lot of people have come to me with, you know, let's use predictive markets, or let's use communities, or let's use X methodology. And I'm not saying that those are bad methodologies, I'm saying they're great methodologies. But the people that are delivering on them aren't the experts in the field of alcohol or beverages. And so my issue then becomes, I am spending a lot of time investing in educating you about what I already know. And it's taking me a while to get for you to start delivering on top of that.
It's like the conversation that I've had with people, and I've done sales coaching for years, and I'll ask somebody to give me a, you know, talk about their strategy, and what they'll start describing is more tactical in nature. Do you find that same kind of confusion or correlation? People think that they're giving you actionable insights when really they're driving you down a path of more discovery?
Absolutely. I think you framed it right. Like, they take me down a path of discovery and interesting things to know, and not on, these are the questions that I think are most important to you. This is where I can help you solve it. I think what I have pushed a lot of my agencies to do is start thinking more like consultants, you know, from the BCG or the Bains or the McKinsey's of the world, where you actually start thinking about, what is it that you want to deliver? You want to deliver a concrete piece of work that will help drive more brand love with consumers. And you have a range of frameworks and methodologies to do that. We will find the best one for you. But in the end, this is what we're going to give you. And that, I think, is something that's really lacking in the industry right now. From a methodology perspective, I think we're experts in methodology. The onus then becomes on the insights person to basically start to think about, okay, what methodology do I use here? I'd rather be the I like the conversations where I say, I actually want to use these kind of people for these projects because I like the way they think, and I know they'll get me there.
We're talking to Simrat Saran of Anheuser-Busch. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Audible Insights is supported by CMix from Critical Mix. CMix is a collaborative new way to create insights from Critical Mix. CMix gives you fast and easy access to survey programming and management, global target audiences and data visualization right at your fingertips, all in one convenient place. Unlike other DIY survey tools, CMix lets you decide how much or how little you want to be involved with your survey project. The Critical Mix team of experts is available to help along every step of the way whenever you need them. Visit cmix.com to get started today.
Welcome back to Audible Insights. I'm your host, Paul Kirch, and we've got Simrat Saran of Anheuser-Busch. Let's jump back in. The world is changing very rapidly around us, Simrat. I think that the research industry has always tended to be slower moving, but I see that changing. And I think that a lot of researchers may be out there really not operating with their eyes open in the way that they should be. What are some things that we can do to avoid risks, or what are some of those big risks that people in research departments are facing that they really need to have their eyes open around?
My perspective, I think, will be slightly different from a lot of other people. I come from the background of, we need to deliver actionable insights. We don't need to deliver fancy methodologies. What I see that we end up doing is spending a lot of time on talking about, we've incorporated digital in this, or we've incorporated X thing in this, and we've been able to figure out how to make it all statistical significant. You know, the hard research is great and has its place in theoretical research, in the world of theory. In the world of practicality, a 5% statistical significance or a 10% statistical significance doesn't move the needle in terms of sales. What does is unique points of view that allow us to break through and market. And I feel like we've spent a lot of time on the research on research. So for example, social buzz. The amount of conversation I've heard on social buzz not accurately being able to predict brand image or brand health because of X, Y, and Z reasons, like, I've seen a lot of work on that. What I don't see is people really coming out and saying, listen, guys, social buzz is out there. These are all the different ways that you can look at it. This is the framework we use to identify whether you're on the uptick or you're starting to go down. And that is what I need. I think that's one of those places where we spend too much time trying to validate different methodologies rather than seeing how do we use this and how do we apply this in our framework. So give you an example on even the stuff that we do with neurosciences. What we've tasked our neuroscience partners to do is actually sit down with creatives and talk to them scene by scene on what the purpose of each of the scenes were, and then go back and correlate it to what is really happening in consumers' heads. That way you're getting both the creative input as well as the consumer input to come back with a point of view that says, if you want to optimize your ad, this is what you need to do, as opposed to these are the scenes that didn't work, just take them out of the ad. That's the complete wrong use of neuro. And luckily we have a partner that doesn't do any of that. They actually think about the ads very holistically and from the creative point of view.
You're touching on some areas that I also agree that the focus for the longest time was on telling a good story with the data. And the qualitative world, it's so much easier to tell a story than it is to take some numbers and translate to a story. But I think the idea of getting to the point where the research is used to give us practical guidance on where to go, that's the answer right there. And I think so often it's just about the hard numbers.
Absolutely. And I think this comes from a couple of places. One is this drive from the industry to make things faster, more efficient, cheaper. And what that has done has taken some of the creativity out of the work. And it has created almost like these cookie cutter versions of all the basic tests that we do. So for example, when we're doing innovation testing, depending on the agency I go with, I know there's a set template that I'm going to be measuring my innovation against. I don't know if that is right for my industry. I am going with the basic flow that people have been saying that this is the standard for how we test innovation. I disagree with that. I think we need to customize to each innovation because the role of each innovation could be different. And we can't be thinking about, let's just change action standards on a set of metrics. We actually need to start thinking about when you're trying to create disruptive innovation, what are the metrics that you look at and what is the path of investigation you take to see whether this is truly going to be disruptive. Versus if you're trying to create a line extension that has to stay for a longer period of time, what is the path that you need to investigate? So these are things that we've lost that I would love to see come back.
So that leads us to my closing question here. And I look at the way that the research community is changing, but I'd like to get your perspective on how the researcher role within your company is changing and how you see the researcher role industry-wide changing over time.
I think first thing, Paul, I would say that research and insights are at odd ends of each other, because if you're doing insights, you're not doing research. If you're doing research, you're not doing insights. They both feed into each other, but they're different. I think, and this was the start of my talk with different associations, which was that you find a CMO, a chief marketing officer, you find a chief sales officer, you find a chief procurement officer, you find a chief solutions or technology officer, but you never find a chief insights officer. And my belief is the reason for that is insights on its own isn't a tangible deliverable to the organization. It is a supplier of information in most cases, and that needs to change. We need to own tangibly what insights means and how it fits within the broader stream of action. And because we feed into everything, we feed into what marketing is doing, what sales is doing, what procurement is doing in terms of investing more in, or supply chain is doing, investing more in renewable energy or organic ingredients or better for you ingredients. That is stuff that's consumer trends that's driven from insights. Really knowing how to tell a story to an organization to start to move the ship, that's a key skill that as an industry, we've sort of neglected. Because we've really fallen back on, listen, let's get the data for you and make the data scientifically robust. One of the points I make is researchers and insights people need to realize that data are like your children. People only want to hear about it so much before they get bored. Knowing how to leverage data in the right way and knowing what kind of data to use is crucial to our organization. And the third one is having a point of view. I think a lot of times insights organizations in many companies come as either validators of people's hypotheses or are gatherers of new information at their worst. But at their best, insights is the neutral body that basically provides an assessment of risk and reward and also provides a point of view on how we should action as a company. Those skills we haven't trained ourselves in.
In that vein of conversation, of course, we haven't talked about my kid. I could probably entertain you for at least 5 minutes. In all seriousness, though, the insights role, insights label, is that something that you see taking a more powerful position over time?
Personally, I know insights is the standard nomenclature in most organizations. I do not like insights as a word because I don't know what I tangibly deliver when it's insights. I know I deliver more than insights in the organization. I deliver strategy. I deliver consumer perspective. I deliver a range of other things, a commercial mindset. I would like us to find a better word for insights, so to better represent the work that we do. So I think that's one. But I think there's always going to be a stage of insights development for that function across companies. There are going to be companies where that unit is only going to drive research, which is fine. There are industries where that is very important. Pharma, I think, is one of them. And this is just me from the outside. There are also going to be organizations where insights truly are going to be defining strategy. And we see that a lot within the creative world, where the insights are the start of all new creative direction. It doesn't matter where you fall, as long as you're doing your job really well and delivering value to your company, that's first and foremost. You have to decide as an individual within this space what kind of company you want to be in. If you're a hardcore statistician or researcher, choose the industry that's right for you. But if you're somebody that is slightly more on the commercial or the business standpoint, find the industry or find the companies that really value insights in that capacity. I think so. Find your fit. No, I wouldn't say any one is bad or worse. It's just you have to decide for your own person.
Samrat Saran, thank you so much for being on Audible Insights.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
I personally really enjoyed what Samrat had to say. Hopefully you did as well. Some great insights there. He obviously has learned a lot of things as he's moved through his career, and some things that are working and working well within Anheuser-Busch are things that you can also implement in your own organization. So hopefully you took some notes and now you can take some action. Once again, my name is Paul Kirch, host of Audible Insights, and I want to pay a special thanks to the Insights Association. Through this show and other means like the insightsassociation.org, you're going to find a lot of ways that they're advancing the insights and research industries. So we thank them for all their contributions and everything they do. And if you want to learn a little more about me, check out my other show, Boss Academy Radio, at bossacademy.com, where we focus on real business ownership success strategies. Thanks again for your time. I hope you have an amazing day.
Thanks for listening to Audible Insights, a production of the Insights Association. We empower intelligent business decisions through our support of the marketing research and analytics community. Learn more about our advocacy, code of standards, education, certification, and the many services we provide to businesses and professionals at insightsassociation.org. And if you'd like to reach out to Paul Kirch directly, email him at paul@websitesandleads.com. Thank you for tuning in. We hope you have an insightful day.